Today on our Tech for Business podcast, we're joined by Kyle, our CEO and president, Rob, our director of services, and Andrew, our customer strategy advisor. And we are, it's our third year in a row we're doing upcoming technology trends. So I actually want to start with this past year. We talked a little bit at the beginning of the year thinking it was going to be a lot of AI. We talked a lot about the cloud. So I'd like to get your reflection on, did we hit the mark? What did we miss? What sort of happened in 2024 when it came to kind of tech trends? What do you guys think? Were we on the mark for our tech trend guesses, or did we miss something?
I would say yes.
Yeah. I think we specifically mentioned Copilot in the last year, and then that was huge this past year.
Yeah, I think between ChatGPT, Copilot, Gemini, Gronk on X, there's all kinds of, it's like the year of AI for sure. I think next year is going to be a lot more of the same. There's just, yeah. Exponentially, it keeps doing more. But yeah, for sure, on AI, more and more cloud stuff, definitely still the trend. I think there's far more customers now that were, I think, hesitant to move to the cloud. They still wanted some servers on site that are now just saying, yeah, we're looking at the cloud alternative, doing those things. I think both from their vendor standpoint, the vendors have got their cloud offering side of it too. It's definitely picked up even more momentum side of it to that. The days of on-premise is not the norm. It'll be more, there's certainly definitely use cases where it will still apply, but not to the general masses for sure.
Was there anything that surprised any of you from 2024? Anything that kind of came up that you didn't see coming? Yeah.
The CrowdStrike outage was a big one.
That was a big one. Yeah. Didn't see that one coming. Yeah. Definitely made things rethink some supply chain. I know Microsoft's making some changes around that side, they announced development changes now to remove that from the kernel side of those that caused that side of it. So again, there's a half full view on all these things when things do get better when you have some unfortunate events from those things. But yeah, I didn't see that coming. But that was a huge disruption that was interesting side of it. And it really, I think, tested companies the ways that they want to be tested. Sure. You think of all the things you prepare for the company when you talk about a disaster recovery and business disruption side of those. You got the usual cyber incidents, and you got your natural disasters and other things that come up. But everybody's thinking that a trusted piece of software that you have on there is going to cause every Windows device in your environment to not boot.
That is not, where in your disaster recovery plan was the rebuild every single device we own.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That is crazy.
Yep. Crazy.
The other one I think about, or at least some, are you didn't hear a lot of private-ish healthcare data breaches, big ones like we have in years past. But there were some with at least the most recent one with the telecom companies and pretty much saying, hey, you need to figure this out. They're in the network and then you need to upgrade your stuff. So I believe that was Salt Typhoon. I listened to an article recently about it and really interesting about the two major sides of our communication network and how it's almost a public utility with our cell phone network, but it's privately run and learning about the standards. So I'm interested to see if there's going to be standards that come out of that with cybersecurity and different things saying, hey, you guys need to have these things in place, or you have to have certain standards of your equipment.
There's been so much consolidation and there's always so much mergers and all the other things with that particular industry side of it that it always seems to be the impetus to where all these gaps show up because they have it's such a huge difficult lift to retrofit all these different technologies that they get through their side. So they tend to linger on, and then they become the, you know, the kink in the armor that always gets exploited side of it. When you mentioned the healthcare side, that they're on the United Healthcare one, that was the largest breach that affected, I don't know how many percent of healthcare that used it as their pay supplier. It was huge percent. That was an acquisition, and it wasn't up to United Healthcare's standard side of it because it was an acquired company. They just hadn't got to it yet. That's the usual suspect side of it. But I think what you're kind of referring to, I think in that industry side, that's got to play a large part of that is how quickly they acquire, how vast and complex those are, is leaving gaps.
Yep.
Not enough time in the day, not enough people to throw at the problem.
I think we've seen now that our own industry, our own client base, where there's a lot of mergers and acquisitions that happen. And when those happen, there is a lot of work that has to go into figuring out how to mesh the systems together and make sure that you're bringing everybody up to a minimum standard. And I can see how larger companies even could struggle. We struggle with that sometimes, even just trying to find the right solution to bring everything together. So it is a complex, very complex set of variables you're dealing with when you're doing that kind of merge.
Definitely. So let's talk 2025. Is it the second year in the row for AI? Is there something else coming that we should be aware of? Is there things coming up in your customer business meetings or tools that you're looking at that you're like, this is the technology, this is the trend that's coming? What are you guys seeing?
I think you're going to see a lot more adoption of AI. I think you're seeing a broader base of users actively starting to use it in their day-to-day work. Between Copilot and ChatGPT, a lot of these other ones are out there. 24, I think, was a good foundational year for it. But I think you're going to see every year now going forward, you're just going to see it really improve in the adoption, the quality of what you get out of the AI. You still have issues with AI today. It is biased. It is learned from large database sets and large amounts of data that unfortunately has trained it with a bias on certain topics. As they learn how to pull out some of that type of stuff and give it a more even keel, if you will, I think you're going to find it grows very rapidly.
Yeah, I think that's very valid. You can see it getting better integrated into the application sides of it. If you think on AI, it's a broad term, but in essence, it's a digital assistant and how it can assist in the task sides of it to allow streamlining and time savings of the individuals to expedite the tasks and create conformity side of it. You are seeing it now that the software is maturing into it, that it's being integrated and applied into the different applications, whether it's an ERP application, whether it's Microsoft Teams or Outlook and those sides of it, the way Microsoft utilizes it and all different aspects on how it can expedite tedious tasks on your behalf by just a click of the button that it augments your ability to do the task. Not full replacement necessarily. In some cases, full automation, but in many cases, it's just allowing you to reduce the time to do the same task. And I think to that point, I think that's the maturity side you'll see just continue to evolve out of that they get better and better at that all the time.
For sure.
Example of that's one of the business tools we are looking at as we move forward, as we grow as a company. It has some AI built in. You could put in some quick notes about a customer issue or a ticket you've been working on, and you can click on the AI button and it will give it a little better verbiage, make it a little bit more business focused and just polish it for you. But it presents it for you a much more professional appearance than what, as an engineer, I'm just throwing in quick notes, right? So I'm not necessarily a business person. I'm not an author that's going to write a bestseller by any means, but the AI can assist me. It can actually help me present a better explanation to the customer by taking my quick notes and parsing it through AI and going, oh, and actually give me a complete paragraph or sentence instead of just some quick notes. So that's one of the things that, even just as an engineer, I see as an advantage coming up in 2025 that we're going to be able to start about and utilize some of our tools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The AI that I was just thinking of some notes is going for more of a cloud integration, like large language model, where it's, you put in a prompt, you get something out. It's going to be those littler things, the auto translate to a new language, the Grammarly helping you with your grammar right away. I had a meeting with Kelsey, who's in our marketing department, earlier today, and she was talking about marketing and just thinking about AI, where it's, hey, if you want certain brand language, that you could have that in whatever grammar correction to say, oh, yep, this is how we have that. And having it more native AI instead of like distributed or cloud or yeah.
That is another trend that I'm seeing a little bit starting to poke its head up. So much of the AI we deal with today is very large public models that have trained the AI. You may be in an industry where you don't want to submit information to a public forum that then becomes part of that AI going forward. So there is a trend where you can essentially privatize it. You can have it in your own separate business specific entity and try and train your own. It's obviously not going to have quite as much back-end learning, but it does keep it from potentially competitors being able to utilize your same verbiage because you use something in there that they went and did something and grabbed some of your information and used it in there. There is a little bit of a trend there for people to be able to isolate AI a little bit and just keep it private within their business.
That's why you license Copilot. But yeah, that's exactly why you do it, to protect you from those sides. The other technology trend side of it, why not the sexy side of it, but I think exciting side is the move to passwordless login sides of those. Mm-hmm. I think I can speak from it. I was an early adopter side. I went password about 3 months ago and I love my life. It is so much better just to have the biometrics to log in. I have no password on my, like I said, not even from a security standpoint, but just the fact that there is no password to hack. I can get through those sides of it. The convenience factor and the expediting of the login process, so how much better it is. It's becoming a reality side of it. Some science fiction when you first hear it side of it going, how does that work? But to move to biometrics and PINs are used, stuff that's stored on the device in an encrypted manner side of it, like Face ID and your phones, and the other side of it is it's here, it works really well side of it. It's very quick side. I think being able to roll that into the business application sides and have users experience that side. And I think you're seeing it throughout everywhere you go and a lot of your logins, your bank logins, other sides where they reference pass keys and these other sides of it are all that movement to say, there won't be a password. You have a pass key. That's what it is. You don't, there is no password to hack side with it. And I think that's going to gain a lot more momentum. I think in 2025, become a lot more, the adoption is going to start becoming more real for a lot of organizations now that, a lot of the backend infrastructure, those things, the positions, the timings, getting right. And I'll give Microsoft some kudos here. The Windows 11 movement side of it and those sides to require the hardware to have these TPMs that allow for the data encryption to be stored on the Windows computer side of it that enables it is the enabler for that technology side to become real. So I think that's a huge aspect of it. And by making Windows 10 go into life and Windows 11 have those requirements as the businesses and the manufacturers knowing it, that have made sure they're incorporating those things, it all feed into the momentum to make that real world happen. I'm super excited for it. I think it is a huge benefit to the business side of it because there's huge productivity gains and it's certainly a huge risk reduction. Getting rid of those passwords. Mm-hmm. My gosh, that's so many years we've talked about password management. And the password fatigue from the users and telling them, well, you got to have 8 characters. Now you got to have 16 characters. Why you got to go to 21 characters? Okay.
And then it was changing the password at a different place, but you're going to have your phone and it's going to prompt you at a certain time and it's going to prompt you every 2 hours. Whatever requirements. Yeah.
Yep.
One of the things that I can see on the landscape, at least, is, as you mentioned, Windows 11 is going to be the end all be all supported if you don't normal users, at least in October, with Windows 10 going end of life. But with that, and just thinking if the TPM is not there, the new US administration, if there's going to be tariffs where there may be cost increase. So I think that will be interesting to see how that kind of plays out in our industry. If everything is speculation right now, but if any of that happens, how that kind of changes product acquisition, where those chips are being sourced from, and what the cost of those will be in the end.
Yeah.
And can we dip our toe just a little bit into some things that are coming in 2025 and the threatening? With all this increase in AI and computing power, one of the things I was reading about that's on the rise, I think is going to become a much more prevalent issue in 2025 is deep fakes. The ability for people within a few minutes to take a likeness of somebody and put their own words to it and make it look almost lightly. With all the different security we're doing, and the fact that we're telling you gotta verify stuff, you have to understand who you're talking to. If somebody's doing deep banking, all of a sudden, look like Kyle's telling me, hey, Rob, I need you to send me this $50,000 over here. And I'm looking at Kyle going, that's Kyle. How do I verify that? That's something we got to start thinking about. And how do we combat those types of risks that are coming up? We're getting all this great technology. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it also brings a lot of new risks we have to think about.
And we already know how to solve that, Rob. What's blockchain?
Blockchain.
Okay. Yep. That's all they're going to say. What's coming is you will have a blockchain signature side that validates that it's you. So if you're doing any kind of broadcast side, it will have a validation similar to the way HTTPS works, SSL or certificate side, the private public key side, but it will have a validated side that it is you. So if it doesn't have that, you assume it's false, right? So there will be the validator side that can validate you through blockchain allocation sides of it. So imagine you're going to start subscribing where you have essentially this digital stamp that goes on your video sequences. They're saying that's not going to be important. Definitely in the public space side of it, because you go through, decides to say whether it's President Biden, President Trump, it's Putin, it's whoever, that they would have a stamp, right? You will see the validation. If you don't see it, you assume it's a deep fake. Somebody just, it's not real. Because it is getting quite good. You can't rely on your eyes to identify. I know there's ways you can identify it that people trained can do it, but that's going to become even more and more difficult as technology continues to improve.
What the weaknesses are. Like the people who are saying, hey, this is a deepfake, here's why, is the same reasons it gets better.
Yeah.
They look and they say, okay, how can I fix that? The sync between the speech and the mouth movements. That's one of them. And okay, yep, we can fine tune that. We can work on that. And it only makes it harder. I'm just thinking about my Kyle Etter TikTok filter is going to be out the window with that blockchain validation. So I'll have to rethink it.
Yeah. I was then listening to Mark Andreessen. He was the one that enlightened me to that's how they solve it. He was very confident in that. That's already coming. The other side on those deepfake sides a little bit is, either you've seen the technology or any of you seen the HeyGen technology side, the marketing side of it, where it's basically a marketing. They send an inquiry from like a sales inquiry comes in the CIT side of it. They immediately get a video, personalized video message from me to them saying, hi, Andrew, hi, Rob, hi, Ariel. Thank you for your inquiry. I'm super happy to meet with you. We're super excited to go through and do something for CIT side. Within minutes is this personal video side, but it's 100% AI generated. Just taking the image of the company president or those other sides on it and just sending over this personalized video message that's just automatically customized by the AI engine. I'm going, that stuff is just the power of video alone, but then combine that with AI to generate that and use really that kind of that AI generation, like deep fake, but using it in a productive business manner side of those to do those things to allow you to multiply and personalize in a video form versus just an email. Very cool. Very impressive. If you trust their site, the CEO and founder of HeyGen is the one who sends you your personalized message back on. He goes through, and by the way, this is 100% AI. I'm 100% AI talking to you right now. And it's basically what he said there. You're like, okay, that's really cool. Freaky, but cool.
Yeah, freaky.
How much do you think with Google's recent announcement about their quantum computing chip and that just the sheer computing power of that device, do you feel like that's going to be noteworthy in 25, or do you see that in later years?
I don't think it's in 25. I think it'll be more advancements, but I think
quantum is a scary process because with quantum computing, they're saying you can basically crack any password in a matter of minutes.
Oh yeah.
And the ability to do even improve deep fakes, everything else, it just is going to grow exponentially. Quantum computing is going to be a pretty large jump for technology, for concerns over cybersecurity, everything else. I don't think 2025 is the year you're going to see it in any kind of mass adoption or rollout. I think you're going to continue to see for the next 2 years additional improvements. Personally, I think we're probably closer to 2030 before you see some real world applications of it hitting the mass market type of
environment. I think the real world applications on what you hear from those are going to be mind boggling when it happens.
They're talking about septillion.
And then it's not even close. I think they use some of the metrics they throw. He took every computer that existed and he applied to every molecule that exists in the universe right now. Quantum computer would outperform it by a magnitude of exponential proportions. It's that scary of how fast you tie that with AI. I mean, it's exciting and scary at the same time. That's what they're trying to figure out, because it is unmeasurable magnitudes of computing power faster that, like I said, could crush the financial markets. It could crush all the cryptography, all the stuff we talked about from all this past. It could break all that. So in the wrong hands of who's utilizing the power, again, there's just a ton that it is, got a lot to ponder about. On the other side of it, used for great applications. Again, if you put the power of AI in those things, it could probably cure cancer in a matter of less than a few minutes. It could, a lot of the challenges that weren't able to solve for, it could solve for. It could create new ways to do things we never thought about. Your ability to travel faster than light, all these things could be solved. It'll probably do those things. There's great ways that it could probably, you know, change human civilizations entirely from those things. But it's it is crazy stuff when you hear what that's capable of doing.
Google did out there, though, of being able to do it at room temperature is a pretty significant jump forward, because they've always had to have that sub-zero cooling. It's basically been room-sized computers to do this kind of stuff. And now Google's getting down to that area where you're starting to move from that area of the idea of full building size mainframes to first Intel processor that came out, where you could all of a sudden have this power of a mainframe on your desk. That's where they're starting to go. But yeah, I think it's still a few years away before we start to see that.
Oh, for sure on that. Yeah, but I think you're certainly your government and those other sides and your Googles and Apples and are going to, you know, be earlier pioneers on leveraging these things and back-end cloud services and those other sides of it goes through those things. I think it's going to introduce, but it's definitely tied to AI and most applications side of it, because it's just the ability to, because the human being just won't be able to keep up with the logic side that comes from it. This is where it seems to apply most, but it's going to be really interesting to watch from that standpoint. I wouldn't expect more news out of it. Speaking of the small side, there was the NVIDIA announcement. I don't know if either of you saw those on the, it's a handheld AI powered computer side of it that could run your own localized LLM within your own palm of your hand side with it. Rather than, if you think about when you're accessing your OpenAI and the ChatGPT and these other sites, you're talking about clusters of compute that are running to help do these things, that this is a fully self-contained but powerful enough chip to run localized with your hand side with it. Everything I said, they said that's a game changer. Again, that's exponentially increasing, because that means you start to go through those things where now that kind of chip can be embedded into a car, can be embedded into different component sides of it. So now, like we've seen with microprocessors and compute chips into a lot of our everyday things we do side of it, you start bringing in localized AI, offloading chip sides into those things in an informal manner. Again, these things is exponentially going just insanely crazy.
You're seeing that in the current market too. You got all the new Microsoft computers coming out with Copilot chips built in to give you that localized AI. So you're already seeing that in pretty well mass adoption. I mean, it's going to be kind of standard going forward. You can start seeing that in everything, I think, in 2025. So.
You're seeing it in some of the commercials for phones for the holidays.
AI built into your new phone or whatever.
Or the new Apple phone. And I knew we were close, but I didn't realize it was just like, hey, here's the new phone. And like, it seemed to come to the consumer very, just being like, hey, here's this new one and this is in there. And it's all of it. That seemed like a jump, but okay. You just wonder how they're utilizing that on the back end. Mm.
Yeah, my understanding on the NVIDIA side, though, is, again, they're running the LLM entirely local, where these other applications of what's in the iPhone 16 and these other ones is still leveraging the cloud to use those things, but it still requires the extra compute. It doesn't have the power to run the actual AI local, which basically means if you had dinner of internet, it'd still work. That's
crazy.
Releasing that connectivity requirement, I think, is huge. That was big. And one other thing inside is I definitely want that Optimus robot from Tesla whenever that sucker comes out. Thing.
I saw one I can only describe as a deep fake of Elon Musk talking about how there is no self-driving. For every Tesla, there is an employee in India that takes control of your car and drives for you.
That wasn't a deep fake.
That's pretty good.
That's hilarious. Oh my gosh. It sounds like it's going to be a very interesting next year. So just to close out here, what do you think businesses in quarter one, they're sitting down, they're making their plan, what should be top of their list to either put their money into, their time into, their resources? What's that number one trend that you think they should be focusing on right away in quarter one?
Windows 11. You've got until October to get rid of Windows 10. If your machines aren't capable of it, if they're not ready for it, you got to start figuring out what you're going to do about that. Start thinking about Windows 11 upgrades and new machines if you need them.
Yeah, hopefully you had that thought last year, so you're already well on the way. But
hopefully, but if you're not, then you need to think about that in Q1.
Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking more, again, still continued risk mitigation. I think you need to be looking at all aspect sides of those. And I think if you're moving the right direction, I think you can start looking at and planning through passwords, logins, start looking at those capability sides of where those are going. If you're on those sides, those are good things to be on. And then obviously we talked a lot about AI. I think on reviewing AI and doing use case sides of it and running, you know, productivity analysis sides of those things, where if you understand your tasks, you understand how long it takes to do things or your staff to do certain tasks, sides of those, and compare them when you add AI assistants into those sides of it to automate and create advanced workflow sides of those. If you can cut 50 to 75% of a task down and run that over repetitively side of it, those are significant return on the investment sides on it. And everything they say, and I think it is very real, is it's not a question of whether businesses are going to use AI or not. It's going to be the businesses that use AI are going to be the ones that win. If you're not, you're going to get crushed. You will, just because the same business in the same industry using AI could do it with half or a quarter of the staff that you have. They're significantly more profitable. They're going to crush you. That's just what's going to happen. That's very real. So I think you have to look at it. And it's, other than roofers or your services sides of those, if there's knowledge part of your business side of it, that's, you employ knowledge workers and you apply it in some capacities within your business side of it, you have to have some understanding of that to look at it and not be afraid of it, because it's here. It's, you need to do it because your competitors are going to do it. You look at it.
Another little piece of that too, and that's about new technology, but if you haven't yet adopted single sign-on and multi-factor authentication, you need to get that in there, because The ability to have just one login and have it protected by multiple factors, be able to move to the passwordless thing and have it be able to log you into multiple different tools without having to remember all these different patterns, that's also a big time saver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think my thought was looking at what physical hardware you have and how you can, what is there an equivalent to get it somewhere else? Mm-hmm. If that's a server, if that is whatever service that is, being able to say, hey, we shouldn't have this on site anymore. Microsoft has done a very good job at getting that into service equivalents, at least looking at that and other products like it.
Awesome. Thank you all for joining us today. I'm really excited about what's to come.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoyed this topic, please let us know. Subscribe or reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode.